Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with a newly betrothed Aaron Fitt. I am John Manuel, and Aaron, we want to congratulate you on your recent nuptials. It was, well, first of all, it was in cool green Asheville, so it was a plus two big ones on that, going to the site of my alma mater, Great Asheville High School, which my son gave a cursory glance when I drove him past my lovely alma mater of Asheville High. But good time had by all. Baseball America social event of the season, I think. It's hard to outstrip the annual Will Lingo Super Bowl party,
but
the Fitt wedding managed to do that. So huge kudos to you on overcoming that.
Well, we're just glad that you guys were able to come celebrate with us.
It was a celebration. We celebrated good times, and that's what we're going to do on this podcast here on BaseballAmerica.com and at iTunes, where you can download us. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter. We're over 5,000 followers now on Twitter. In fact, I think we're well over 5,000. We'll probably pick up a few more. I think Ben Badler's going to pick up a few more after his mention in Rob Nyer's blog today when we're recording this, and we picked up a lot since the draft. Picked up a lot on draft deadline night on August 17th when Aaron Fitt via Twitter broke the story that Steven Strasburg had signed with the Washington Nationals for more than a $15 million major league contract, which was fantastic. Thanks to the fact that our website was down, we had Twitter. We broke that story via Twitter, and we're going to break some news to you here on this podcast about the 2010 draft, because Aaron, draft season never ends. And we've got a lot of summer college leagues to talk about. And we're even going to bring in the second half of this podcast our very own Connor Glassy to talk a little high school. So we have a jam-packed podcast today as we talk summer college leagues and then 2010 top 25 college and high school prospects. So a lot to cover, Aaron. And first off, we have to jump right in with the summer college leagues, which can be a chore. Let's face it.
Yeah.
There used to be like 8 to 10 summer college leagues, and that was well and good, and we used to do a top 10 Alaska. Way back in the day, we did a top 10 Alaska League prospects and a top 10 Cape Cod League prospects, and that was it. Now we do 18 leagues plus Team USA, so 220 scouting reports on BaseballAmerica.com on summer college league players, and of course you have a top 30 Cape that's mixed in there that Jim Callis does. Let's start off real quick, I guess, Aaron. Let's just touch on the Cape.
Yeah.
We probably should do that. That's where everyone has the most interest. I do think it's fascinating that we had 3 Atlantic Sun Conference pitchers drafted in the first round, the supplemental first round this year, and now we have another Atlantic Sun pitcher in Chris Sale, who pitched his way into first-round consideration for the 2010 draft, and we ranked him as the number one prospect in a, I think, admittedly weak Cape Cod League field. What's your take on the Cape? You went to the Cape All-Star game.
Yeah.
What was your take on Chris Sale and then just the Cape as a whole this summer?
Well, first of all, I think you're right that the Cape was down. But you know what? Team USA was down, and every league was down this year. It's a weak college class, this rising class, and we'll talk more about that later. But you know, I do think, in my opinion, Chris Sale was the right guy. I think he was the right choice for number one. I mean, he dazzled in the All-Star game in the brief look that I had, only 6 pitches. But, you know, I base my strong opinion of Chris Sale more on what I've heard from people who have seen a lot of this guy. I mean, the scouts down in Florida who have seen him kind of jump up in velocity since high school. I mean, he was kind of a low-to-mid-80s guy in high school. He jumped up to kind of the 86 to 89 range as a freshman. And then this year he jumped again as a sophomore. Now he's kind of in that 90 to 95 range. He's got a very good changeup. I guess the knock on him is the breaking ball, but he does have kind of a little bit of a frisbee-type slider, because he's got a low arm slot that I think can be an effective pitch for him. I guess there are questions about that. But
the guy that all the buzz is this morning in prospect circles was Madison Bumgarner, making his big league debut last night. And that's what Ben Badler was tweeting about, I was referring to earlier. And Madison Bumgarner is a low arm slot guy. Madison Bumgarner doesn't have a great breaking ball. Chris Sale, I don't think, has Madison Bumgarner's fastball command. And just having talked to a scout about Matt Bum, and I'll end up blogging this later today, but I think it's a big difference in Madison Bumgarner and Chris Sale. But there's some similarities, too.
Yeah.
And Sale has good size, like Bumgarner. Not as physical.
Right.
Taller, but not as physical. Low slot. Left-handed. A plus fastball. And there's a lot to like, I think, with Chris Sale. I just also think that in an average Cape year, he would not be the number one prospect. I think what the Cape tells us overall, Aaron, and what we kind of already knew, the 2010 college class is not shaping up as a super strong one.
And I've talked to scouts, John, who who have Chris Sale number one on their whole college board.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, he's, you know, for me, it's Anthony Renato, and again, we'll discuss that more later. But you know, I think in this Cape Cod League group, and for me, it opens wide up after that. I mean,
no doubt.
Zach Cox is number two. I mean, he's a very intriguing player, but he's also clearly a flawed player. I mean, his defense at third base is a question mark. He strikes out a decent amount, but he's got power. I do think he's going to hit. I mean, he's a good player, clearly, but there's a lot of question marks for that to be the number two guy on this list.
And he's got back issues. And he hit 270
as
a freshman. I mean, that's good. It's fine. It's not, you can't bury him based on the numbers, but I mean, he's not a him and then have Jed. Now you pronounce his last
name. Jorko.
Jed Jorko of West Virginia. I've seen his name butchered all over the place. I didn't want to butcher the pronunciation, but you know, Jed Jorko is kind of a, and he's getting Dan Uglick comps. And the guys I've talked to really think he can hit.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
And that makes him stand out in this class. For me,
he's got some legitimate power too.
Yeah, that's it's strength. I mean, maybe he's not this athletic. But you get Dan Uglick comps a lot with guys like that. I'm going to throw Brett Lowry on him a little bit. Not having seen him, because that's the same thing you hear about Brett Lowry. Brett Lowry is physical. He has power. He can really hit. That'll have to be for another podcast when J.J. Cooper and I revisit the World Cup that's going on in Europe, but starting today, as a matter of fact, September 9th. So it all keeps coming together, Aaron. But Brett Lowry playing for O Canada in the World Cup. But yeah, I mean, I think the fact that Jed Jorko, a guy who doesn't have a real great profile, is the number four prospect in the league, tells you a little bit about the Cape. Anybody on that list who maybe is maybe lower on the list, not that a guy that you would have ranked higher, but a guy who really intrigues you, who you think could jump up on our 2010 list as next season approaches?
Well, the first name that jumps out, of course, to me is Jared Parker, who's number 25 on this list because he didn't have a good summer. He struck out a ton. And he struck out an awful lot in his college career at Virginia, too. He swings and misses a lot. I mean, that's the biggest knock on the guy. And I think he was worn out this summer. I think that Jim was right to rank him 25th on this list because you have to base it on performance this summer to some degree. But this is a guy who has serious five-tool potential. You know, he's a true center fielder with speed and power potential. And I think he could jump up if he can continue to improve. I mean, he improved an awful lot, John, from his freshman year to his sophomore year. If he continues to refine that offensive approach, I think you could see him go pretty high in the first round. And you know, another guy that I think is kind of similar that didn't even make this list is Ryan Lamar from Michigan.
Yeah.
A real five-tool guy. Didn't have a good summer. I think that's a guy that could really jump up next year as well.
I think you know who my personal cheese ball is on that Cape list. It's Rob Rasmussen.
Yeah.
I've always been a big Rob Rasmussen guy. Had a scout tell me in Southern California in 2007 he had the best breaking ball in the Southland that year and a legitimate fastball to go with it. And guys who have hand speed like that generally throw a little bit harder as pros than they do as amateurs because the hand speed is how you project velocity. You can do it with the body. You can also do it with hand speed. And then you've got the hand speed to spin a breaking ball like he does. I'm a big Rob Rasmussen fan. And the other thing I would watch from that, from that Cape list, is you had two Virginia Tech guys on there,
and
Mickey Wiswall, right? Or he's Boston College.
BC, no.
I'm sorry, Jesse Hahn, and then who's the other Tech guy?
Austin Waits. The athletic outfielder. And of course, you also have Matthew Price, who didn't make the list.
Oh, he'll be an eligible sophomore next year. And, you know, you saw some head scratching then on the blogosphere and the web, and some of the, I'm sorry to say, less informed people when you saw Pete Hughes' name in that Washington coaching search. Pete Hughes deserved to be in that Washington coaching search. He did a nice job at Boston College. He laid the foundation for what happened for Mick Aoki, who was his assistant, built on. I mean, Mick Aoki deserves the credit for what happened at BC this year. No, I'm not trying to get anything away from Mick Aoki. But Pete Hughes did lay the foundation for that program and then goes to Virginia Tech. And he's clearly laid the foundation for Virginia Tech to get a lot better in college baseball. They've gotten a lot better. And it's not a coincidence, I don't think. I don't think it's luck that or happenstance. They had three players, two who rank in our top 30 and a third who was possible there. So he was in the mix at Washington legitimately.
I think, John, I'm going to make the prediction right now. I think Virginia Tech makes a regional next.
I think so, too. That's where I was headed. And I think you see those seeds. That's one of the great things. That's one of the things both of us like about doing these Summer College League top prospect lists. It gives us a real look ahead to next year's college season. For example, Murray State. Represented very well on our Jayhawk League list. And they had a couple players in other summer college leagues that had nice years. I wouldn't be shocked if Murray State is the team that wins the Ohio Valley next year.
Yeah. Just
little things like that.
Sure.
If Ohio State wins, if Murray State wins the Ohio Valley next year, you'll have seen those seeds first. You'll have known about that first from our summer college list. Let's look at some other colleges, Aaron, that to jump off just from the Cape that had team that sent out a lot of players. Because you have a great stat from last year on our summer college league lists that indicated something about the next spring.
Right, yeah. I mean, last year, John, the two teams each had five players make our lists of our 220 players we ranked.
Yeah.
Texas and LSU led all schools. The only two schools that had five players on this list. And, of course, we know Texas and LSU played for the national championship. So, you know, that's a pretty good indicator of how talent does translate
absolutely
into the spring. This year, there are three teams had five players to lead the nation. Mississippi, Rice, not a big surprise in either of those two
absolutely
schools. How about Washington State, John?
That was
Washington
kind of a stunner.
State made a regional this year. They're going to be awfully darn good next year. They've got a lot of young talent. I mean, the players that they had in the NECBL really stood out. Good projectable left-hander named Adam Conley that they're excited about. You know, Chad Arnold, Donnie Marbut told me this spring is the biggest recruit they've ever had there. A guy that really could take off next year. He's off Tommy John surgery now. He's more than a year removed, more than 18 months removed. I mean, he's a guy that I think could really leap up next year. So Washington State is a program that I think you'll see finish once again up in the top of the Pac-10.
Absolutely. Now I'm going to have to remember which league Rusty Shellhorn is in. It was one of the last leagues that I edited. Was the Powell Latimer League.
Yeah, the Prospect League.
The Prospect League, that's it. The Prospect League, the former Central Illinois Collegiate League.
That's right.
Where you had Mikey Matuk, LSU, number one. We all saw him. This league's list really intrigued me, actually, Aaron, because the kid at Cornell, Brian Billigan, he sounded intriguing. Yeah. Guy with a plus run tool. Kyle Goodell at Valpo, I remember it specifically from doing last year's college preview, where their coach, I think it's Tracy Woodson, the former NC State third baseman, former big leaguer, who put that Goodell is the first and actually the only player in Valpo's baseball program history who was drafted out of high school, didn't sign, and then came to Valpo. So he's got some intriguing talent.
Yeah.
And then they have the Shellhorn kid, who actually was the number 9 prospect, who I remember just very intriguing out of high school in the state of Washington. Guy didn't pitch a lot at Washington State, but struck out all 21 outs in a high school game, whereby strikeout ones for him tied a state record set by Tim Lincecum. He's a little lefty, kind of basically a poor man's Rob Rasmussen is what he is. He's a Washington State guy as opposed to a state of California guy,
yeah.
So he's less polished, hasn't faced the level of competition that Rasmussen did, although Rasmussen also went to a private school. Didn't and that was the big question about him coming out of high school. How would that stuff play against better competition? So we'll see with Rusty Shellhorn. But the guy struck out 89 guys in 68 innings this summer. So got a plus curveball. And we'll see. 5'8", left-hander. Sometimes you can see those short left-handers do some things in college. So there are that's the reason we do these summer college lists. There are guys, even 8 or 9 or 10 deep, in some of these middle-tier, not the Cape, leagues. After the Cape, everyone kind of is in the same bag for me.
With the exception of, I do think, John, the Northwoods League has clearly established itself as the clear-cut number 2 league.
And I do think year in and year out,
yep,
they are the most consistent second league. I think there might be other years, some years where other league rivals it in talent, but I agree with the Northwoods League. And in terms of attendance, it's the number 1 league.
And here's one thing I've noticed about the Northwoods League. And it's one reason that I think next year, you know, I might consider going to 20 deep on this league.
Wow, look
at
you.
Thing to say.
Wow.
Because there are always guys who don't make the top 10, who are younger guys that got consideration for the top 10. And then next year they go to the Cape and they blow up. And I'll give you a couple examples. Brett Jackson.
Nice.
Almost
good
made
call
by top 10 a couple of years ago in the Northwoods. Didn't make the cut. He blew up. Victor Black,
nice,
another guy.
DBU.
You know, I mean, they're these kind of talented players. And there are guys like that this year that I really like in the Northwoods, young players that didn't quite make the cut. As it is, I think there are some players on this list. Rob Brantley, the catcher out of UC Riverside, is the number 1 guy.
He sounds really interesting. Absolutely,
yeah.
He really does.
Left-handed hitting catcher. He's just loose and athletic. He can really hit, and he's got the tools to catch, I think, as well. Dixon Anderson, another one. Actually, there are two power arms out of Cal on this list.
Yeah.
Dixon Anderson, Eric Johnson. I mean, Cal, they produce a lot of good arms, and we've seen that over the years.
Yeah, Tyson Ross, or this year the right fielder, Brett Smith, the right fielder.
Brandon Morrow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Blake Smith's the guy you're talking
Blake
about.
Blake Smith, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so these are, here's two more for you for Cal, see if they can, if those guys can translate their talent into results this spring.
And, I'm a big Tony Thompson fan. I will see what he could do. I've only seen him one time. I've talked to one scout about him. That's a guy who's very spread out, doesn't use his lower half in his swing very much. But he has got some real juice. And again, he was a guy 20-plus home runs this year, helped lead Kansas into regionals. I mean, they played a regional final in North Carolina. So this is, at the very least, he's a good draft prospect. At the very least, he's a candidate to be an All-American next year. He's one of the best power hitters
He'll be a preseason
in the country.
All-American, I would guess.
Yeah, I think so. And this is a guy who only ranks fourth in the Northwoods League, so it tells you a little bit about the depth of talent in that league.
And I've got two more picks to click that I want to mention in that league.
Please do.
So I really like this league, and I think it's important that we recognize the talent here. Michael Kwasnicka is a guy that he's got good baseball bloodlines. His dad was a star for Minnesota.
Sure, the Minnesota Kwasnickas, absolutely.
Of course, yeah. And he also played pro ball, his dad. This guy is very intriguing. I mean,
so that's
the
how
scouts,
you pronounce that name.
That's right. That's what I learned that this summer.
It's the Elmer Fudd pronunciation.
That's right. He's a switch hitter, a great swing. I think he's going to hit. He's got power. He's got a chance to catch. Really good, intriguing package there. Had a very good summer.
Hey, we like the Gophers. We liked them this previous year. We thought it was going to be a big year in the Big Ten, and it was. And they return a lot of those players. I mean, they lost Matt Nolte.
Yeah.
They have some power arms coming back, don't they?
They have some good power arms. I mean, the guy Seth Rosine, who's in the Cape, almost made the top 30 over there, is the most notable guy. They've got some good Sexton in the bullpen. He's got a really good arm, Colin Sexton. And also, I mean, you know, A.J. Pedersen, I think he was on our freshman All-America team this
year.
That's
right.
A lot of good young players. I think Minnesota is going to be really good next year. I think Michigan's going to be good. Once again, I mean, Ohio State, those three teams.
They're always
again,
in the mix.
They're always in the mix. They will be again. But the last guy, John, this is a guy who could blow up, is Brooks Pinkard.
In the Northwoods.
He's a two-way guy. He really has played more outfield for Baylor, and they're going to use him primarily in the outfield because he's a really good athlete. He's a plus-plus runner.
But the arm strength is there, yeah, no doubt.
But the scouts love this guy off the mound. He was 94 to 96 easy. I mean, without, you know, just effortless. He's very raw off the mound, but this is a guy who I could see going into pro ball, getting drafted as a pitcher, and just exploding.
I just remember reading that and thinking, man, this is a pretty good league when you got a guy who's throwing 95, 96 miles an hour at times, and he's seventh in the league.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the leagues I did, the Jayhawk League, and what else did I do?
Cal Collegiate,
thank you. That's pitiful. First time ever doing the Jayhawk League. Boy, that was not
a fun
league
treat,
to do.
Isn't it?
The Jayhawk League is a tough league to do. The only manager who I didn't talk to ended up being Grover, the human rain delay, Mike Hargrove. I did not let him delay my top 10. But I tell you, this is a league that did have players, just no true number one type of guy. Could have gone with Wes Cunningham, which I did because he could hit. Could have gone with Bobby Doran, who's now at Texas Tech, who has arm strength. The guy who really intrigued me the most on this league, on this list, though, was this kid at Duquesne, Andrew Heck. So we'll have our intern, Dan Budrica, who was there this summer, who goes to Duquesne. He's going to keep a special eye and bear down on Andrew Heck for us.
Sure.
First of all, I have to encourage Andrew to grow a chin strap beard. Second of all, I have to really bear down on Andrew to see if Andrew Heck is more of a prospect as a pitcher. And that's a tough part. When you go to a school like Duquesne and you stand out and you're the best player, you end up going both ways. You end up trying to do everything. And it's hard to scout guys like that because, you know, is he a pitcher? Is he a hitter? The leagues that I think the Cal Collegiate League is an interesting league.
I think
that's the biggest thing that we've seen in summer college baseball over the last few years, that we should wrap this up, this part of the discussion anyway, is that there are more leagues, the talent is more spread out, there are more opportunities for players, which is good. The problem, I do think you have a lot more opportunity for players in the West. It used to be that West players went to the Alaska League or the Cape, and that was basically it.
Yeah.
Now you have the West Coast League is definitely a legitimate option.
Absolutely.
Very well-run league and a good competitive league.
Interesting that a lot of Texas players go out there.
It is.
There were four Texas guys and four Rice guys on your top 10.
Yeah, and you have more guys in the Cal Collegiate. It's very strange. I think that's the Bill Pintard factor for the Santa Barbara Foresters. He really lures players in there. But you did have, I think, even some Texas players in the West Coast League. And then you have California guys who go to the Northwoods. So I think that there's some of these connections that you have out there.
Right.
And whereas in the Southeast, really players either go, it seems like players who are freshmen in the Southeast go to the Coastal Plain League, and then they graduate as sophomores of the Cape.
Right.
And it seems
that
like that's
a lot. And you'll see that, I think, just looking at this year's
Coastal
Plain League list, or the Valley. I mean, just to touch on this year's Coastal Plain League list, Will Lamb, exciting two-way guy, you know, tons of raw talent. If he can tap into it, he could be a big star in college baseball.
Very interesting.
Pratt Maynard is a guy that I think is also very intriguing. There was a definite ACC feel on this list.
Yeah.
Clemson and North Carolina State, well represented. Pratt Maynard played some third base this year. I think scouts like him as a catcher. Guy can really hit, John, and he's got a great arm.
And a guy in Trent Roethlin, who, again, is going to be a factor in the SEC. Ole Miss lost some pitching, but Trent Roethlin's a junior college transfer, has got a chance to pitch on weekends in the Southeastern Conference.
And he's a big recruit for Clemson.
Absolutely.
A couple years ago. Didn't work out there because they had so many arms, but I think he could make a big impact at Ole Miss.
Yeah, no doubt. So I think summer college baseball definitely has its place. I am going to say a special shout-out, because I know he listens to the podcast, to Bob Steinkamp, my guy in the Mink League. He's shutting down the Beatrice Bruins, retiring coach John Jordan Danks, number one. So Jordan Danks having a great year in pro ball this year for the White Sox. Coach Jabba Chamberlain in summer ball. Just in the last few years, that's why the Beatrice Bruins.
Did he have Alex Gordon
matter to you a little bit? I think he did. I think he did have Alex Gordon. So I just think pretty impressive.
It's been there 40 years.
Recent track record,
like that, John, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of little special pockets out there, like the Clarinda A's in the Mink League, where Ozzie Smith played 35, 40 years ago, and still goes back. I think it's 30 years ago. No, it's really probably 35 years ago. But there are little pockets like that. The Cape is a special place, and the Cape gets more than its share of attention because of where it is, Boston, that media market. And the Northwoods League has earned everything it gets because it's good quality baseball. They draw a lot of fans. You know, just think about what Big Ten baseball could be like if the summer season, if the college season were in the summer. That's the Northwoods in some ways. But there are a lot of other little special things out there, like the Midnight Sun game in the Alaska League. Like the way the Clark Griffith and the Cal Ripken League play like an interleague all-star game. Like
the
Ripken in the Valley. Mm-hmm. I love the Valley League, the tradition of like Stanton and the guys who come out of there and the Kristen Pratts who come out of there, and some of our alumni, Nathan Rohde, who was a bat boy in the Valley League.
Right.
So there are a lot of great stories in summer college baseball. All that said, if the NCAA moved its season to summer, all the popularity and the growing popularity of seeing summer college baseball could be translated to college baseball and grow much more, I think, if NCAA college baseball were just played in the summer. The Cotuit Kettleers and the Chatham Anglers are no match for the North Carolina Tar Heels or the Texas Longhorns or the LSU Tigers when it comes to fan appeal and brand name appeal nationally. I just think college baseball and the NCAA is missing out. If they would just move their season to summer college and baseball, MLB could still give them wood bats if they wanted to, like they do these summer college leagues.
There are plenty of people who agree with you on that one, and I think I wrote about this some in the college preview a couple years ago, and Gene Stevenson, of course, has been saying this for years, and there's others who are with you and Gene on that one. It's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
It's fun to talk about.
It sure is fun to talk about in the podcast here on BaseballAmerica.com. He's Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with our podcast question. The email address is podcast@baseballamerica.com. And we're going to go grab Connor Glassy and bring him in and talk a little 2010 draft on the high school side here on the Baseball America podcast. If you follow the draft, you need the Baseball America Draft Almanac in your book library. From 1965 through the 2009 draft, all the picks, all the signings, every organization, plus Baseball America commentary in one reference book. Visit BaseballAmerica.com/store and order your copy today. The new edition ships in November, and this book is available only through Baseball America. Visit BaseballAmerica.com/store or call 800-845-2726 today to order your copy of the Baseball America Draft Almanac. Back on the Baseball America podcast, joined now by Connor Glassy as well as Aaron Fitt, and we're just going to real quickly go over the college top 25 that we did, then we'll go a little bit more in-depth on the high school side. But Aaron, the college side, like you said, the college side of our list, I mean, I think it just tells you the weakness of the class. When we have two junior college players right in the top five, basically.
Yeah.
And I think, granted, Bryce Harper's a special player, and we're going to talk a little bit more with Connor about, since he's seen some of Bryce as well. We get to see him here with the Terminus Star. But LaVon Washington going to Chipola, unsigned first-rounder. LaVon Washington has a chance to go much higher than 30th.
Yeah.
In the 2010 draft, especially if you consider the guy basically had no arm this year, like a 10 arm on a 20-80 scale. It was below. It was worse than any major leaguer's arm, and the guy still got drafted in the first round. I think it tells you the rest of his repertoire, the rest of his tools, I should say. But Aaron, two guys at the top of our list who did not even pitch this summer are really the top two college players for us, and Anthony Renato and Deck McGuire.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I just think that this class is so light on bats. You're going to see a lot of, from the college side, you're going to see a lot of arms go early. Renato and McGuire, to me, are both very polished. They both have great size. They both can really pitch with their fastballs. They both have good breaking balls. They both have good changeups.
Yeah.
I mean, there's to me, these guys are the whole package.
They stand out to me from the rest of that crop.
Yes,
they do. Now, with all due respect to Chris Sale, those two guys fit the profile a lot better than he does.
They pitched in major conferences and had success. I think Deck McGuire was the ACC Pitcher of the Year this year as a sophomore. And Renato, of course, we saw what he did, leading LSU to the national championship. I mean, those two guys are studs, I think. But after that, we had a tough time deciding who would be the top position player on our board.
Very hard.
And, you know, we ended up going with Christian Colon, a guy who doesn't have I'm talking about the top four-year position player.
Right.
A guy who doesn't have huge tools.
Right.
You know, he's kind of fringe average tools across the board, except for, in my mind, John, this is a huge difference. He can really hit. I think he's going to be a plus hitter, and I think he's going to be an offensive second baseman, and I think he's going to be a very productive player because his instincts make everything play up. He's only a fringe average runner, but, I mean, he steals, I think he was 24 for 26 stealing bases this year. Very smart ball player, and he does have some tools, obviously. So, you know, I think he's a guy that will go high in the draft.
I mean, the whole problem here on the whole college side is there's nobody who fits the profile.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. On the position players, there are no profile guys. Colon is a middle infielder who doesn't run. Zach Cox right now is a third baseman. He might fit the profile best, but the hit tool is in question.
Yeah.
Both those guys have injury issues.
So is his defense, too.
I was going to say, he might be an outfielder. Both those guys have injury issues. Cox with his back. Colon broke his leg at the end of the summer. Rick Haig swings and misses a lot. We're not sure about his profile. Jed, say his last name again.
Jorko.
I don't know why I can't remember that. Jed Jorko, again, just doesn't look the part necessarily. He's a good hitter, really good hitter. What position is he going to end up playing? And Bryce Brents might be the best raw power guy out of all these guys.
Huge bat speed, but...
But he's a 6-foot-tall, right-handed hitting outfielder.
A corner outfielder, and you know what else is there are questions about his makeup. I mean,
right.
He did not impress people this summer.
I mean, Gary Brown doesn't make hard enough contact. Jared Parker doesn't make enough contact. I mean, you just go up and down the college player list. There's not a lot of profile guys. It's a tough list. And, you know, the 2008 draft, the reason we got so hyped about that draft is the college guys could hit. You see why the scouts get excited when the college guys get hit. Because look at Buster Posey already in the big leagues. Look at what Gordon Beckham's doing in the big leagues.
Smoke, Alonzo.
Up and down. Pedro Alvarez, the second half, Pedro Alvarez, 1,000 ops in the Eastern League. I mean, that was a special draft, and we knew it coming in. The reason why? College hitters. 2005, we knew it coming in.
Braun,
Zimmerman, even Alex Gordon's been a disappointment.
Yeah.
But Tulowitzki, you just don't have those kind of drafts come along. And this 2010 draft is the kind of draft where next year, Connor, we're going to be talking to these scouting directors, and we're going to hear guys talking about, we don't have any hitters. You know, we're going to hear the same thing over and over again. Aaron, last thing before you pass the mic to Connor is there a guy who wasn't on that top 25 maybe, who's close, that was maybe a guy who we already haven't talked about in the summer college league list who you think could pop on there? I know we had a little difference.
Well, here's the sleeper that I think Connor would agree with us on this one. It's a good transition. Josh Osich from Oregon State. Big physical left-hander who can run that fastball up into the mid to maybe even upper 90s. He's got ridiculous raw stuff. He hasn't had a lot of success. He hasn't really done anything yet in two years at Oregon State. His numbers were okay this spring.
But they
were
dominant,
role. But this is a guy who should dominate with his stuff. I want to see what he can do. Maybe as a junior he pops and he could jump up and be a top. He could be this year's James Paxton. There was a time when James Paxton, everyone thought he was going to be a top 10 pick or so.
Yeah.
Slipped a little bit, but I think Osich has that kind of arm strength, and he's even more physical than Paxton, I think. That's the guy that I think could really pop.
I think you're right. I was a big Josh Osich guy on this list, but you're right. He really just hasn't done enough. So we're gonna bring Connor Glassy in now and talk a little bit about the high school list, because I guess the thing is, Connor, we have two guys named Sale, which is kind of neat. One on each list. I didn't know that. I don't know if we've ever had a player named Sale. Not that I can remember. And now we have two Sales. We have Chris Sale, and we have Josh Sale. out of Seattle, out of your old stomping grounds.
Yeah, that's right. It's actually Sally.
It's Sally. Oh,
spelled the same way.
We're gonna ask if Chris Sale spelled. Is he? Does he pronounce his name that way?
I think it's Sale.
Okay, the guy for Florida Gulf Coast, actually is Sale. But Josh Sally, no relation to John Sally. I hope not. Anyway, I want to see him on Best Damn Sports Show, which thankfully that show's off the air. But it does seem like the top of the high school list is pitchers. But even without Bryce Harper wouldn't have been in the 2010 high school list anyway. But there are some. If you want a hitter, the high school list does seem like it provides at least a few bats, Connor. Right.
Right. There are a few bats, and like you said, the list is dominated by pitching. I think that's again the strength of this year's class. There's some real power arms, especially at the top. But there are some position players too. I mean, Manny Machado is the top position player on our list, and he's a real slick fielding shortstop. But he has a physical body, and he's going to hit a little bit, too.
He sounds like he's got a chance to be a better version of Gio Meyer, who was the first-round pick this year of the Astros and got off to a nice start in pro ball as well. But you know, Gio Meyer pretty much came into the year as probably the best high school shortstop and finished the year as a top high school shortstop. And it sounds like Machado's got a chance to have a better bat than him.
Exactly. Right? It's a similar profile, the high school shortstop that's slick enough at the position to stay there long-term. He's a real fluid defender, good arm, and he has a little bit better body than Gio Meyer, and probably a more advanced hitter. I didn't see Gio, you know, at this time last year, but he looks like he's a more advanced hitter than Gio was at that stage.
You have some names that some people will I think already know about. I know Carson Whitson is not related to Ed Whitson,
nope.
So we got to make sure we get that one right. I love that we have Steve Bedrosian's son on here and Cameron Bedrosian.
Yeah.
I think the names that everyone's going to have to know at the end are A.J. Cole and Jameson, is it Talon?
Tyone, yeah.
Who out of the Woodlands, Texas, and A.J. Cole. And Tyone at number one, Cole number two. I think those guys, sometimes they might go back and forth on that. Just like 2 years ago, there were a lot of people who said, boy, Rick Porcello or Matt Harvey, who do you like better? I mean, who would people take right now? I mean, Matt Harvey's the one guy, you know, Aaron and I probably could have talked about more. Not even in the Cape Top 30, not in the college Top 25. That's a guy who turned down $1 million at a high school 2 years ago. And it really seemed to regress in 2009. But Tyone and Cole, what was the thought process maybe that you and Nate Rohde went through in debating those two at one and two? And what's the differences or the similarities between those two guys?
You know, I wonder if Matt Perkins followed Matt Harvey's career.
That's a great question. Good one.
Tyone and Cole are definitely close. We have them 1-2, and we have Tyone number one right now.
And really, there's not a huge difference between those guys and then Whitson and Stetson Alley, right? Some guys like Stetson Alley in that group, don't they? Maybe Stetson Alley fell off a little bit this summer.
Stetson Alley, you know, we have him at 5, and I think that's where he belongs right now.
Okay.
He does have, in terms of pure arm strength, he has the best pure arm strength. I mean,
okay.
I've seen him up to 98, and
okay.
It's just electric.
Yeah.
But he needs to kind of figure out where it's going.
He has a little more refinement to do than Tyone and Cole.
Yeah, he definitely does. And he's you know, they're more starting pitchers, and he's pitching out of the bullpen now. And
okay.
I saw him at East Coast Pro. In the first inning, he looked great. He was 95 to 97, just dealing.
Yeah.
Second inning, he came out. He was more 92, 94, and his inning went something like walk, walk, hit batter, walk, hit batter.
Yuck.
You know, he really kind of lost his stuff there. So he
gotcha.
Needs a little bit more refinement, but the arm strength is special.
To the original question, Tyone and Cole, I muddied the waters with talking about Whitson and Alley, but I saw Tyone at the Tournament of Stars. The thing that impressed me the most was the size and his ability to repeat his delivery at that size and at that age. It's pretty impressive. Is that why he's number one for you?
That's why he's number one. I mean, A.J. Cole is a little bit more projectable. He has the leaner, thinner frame that scouts can dream on. And the stuff is really good right now. I mean, he's been I've seen him up to 94. You know, I've heard reports that he's been a little bit higher, but he just hasn't been as dominating as Tyone has been. Tyone he's already filled out, but he's showing great stuff, and he's just been, I mean, he's been great every time out in the summer, which is impressive considering these guys pretty much pitch year-round these days.
The consistency to do that in a summer showcase, that's hard to do, and that's an impressive. To me, that means a guy has a chance to get off to a really strong pro start. And I think confidence is such a big factor. When the talent level is similar, if you pitch with confidence, it gives you a better chance to reach your ceiling. And I think that's an underrated factor that I think.
Sure. And, I mean, part of his confidence, part of it is the fact that he can just bring it against the best high school hitters out there and overpower them.
That's a huge part of it. That's the best thing about the summer showcase circuit. A, you do get a lot of innings. Sometimes you almost get too many. Like you said, all these guys are going year-round. But you get to see the best pitchers going against quality hitters.
With wood bats. It's,
exactly.
It's great.
You don't see them overmatch less physical guys.
Sure.
One of the other guys on this high school list, you know, scouts are going to converge on Las Vegas this year anyway. I mean, they do every year anyway. Vegas has a lot of talent. But with Bryce Harper at CC of Southern Nevada, joined now by his brother, a left-handed, was a legitimate left-handed prospect out of Southern California, joined by Donnie Roach, who went to Bishop Gorman, went to the University of Arizona for a year, now transferring also to CCSN. So everyone's going to be in on Vegas anyway, but that's going to bring some additional heat in on Chris Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds, just reading the stuff, Connor, like Chris Bryant has a chance to be the top hitter in the high school class, but he did not bring it consistently this summer. He just didn't perform, it sounds like, this summer.
You're right. He's a big, tall kid, long levers, and, you know, I've seen him with metal.
Okay.
And with metal, it's ridiculous. He puts on a show. There, you know, at the PG National Showcase back in June.
Yeah, Minneapolis.
There was a metal bat home run derby, which is, you know.
Fun.
It's just fun, basically. It's a little fluffy, but it is fun to watch, and especially when Chris Bryant got up there. The other hitters in the event, they were all just pulling the ball down the line, you know, barely getting him over. He steps in and just starts hitting moonshots to center field with metal. Now, with wood, it's a little bit different story with him. He, I think maybe because of his long arms and you know, a little bit longer swing, he hasn't been able to make the adjustments to wood that some of these other guys have so far. But, you know, the raw tools are definitely there. He has incredible power. And when he does start to put that together and, you know, get around with a wood bat, it's going to be special for him.
Sounds like his raw juice is really as good as anybody's in the class. And that's high school or college. There's a distinct lack of power bats on the college side. I mean, Zach Cox is probably the best combination, or Jed Giorko, you know, out of West Virginia. But there's just not a guy that you can look at. It's not like that thumper that we had so many of again in the 2008 draft where you had Smoke and Alvarez.
Mm-hmm.
Just not that guy who fits that profile on the college side. And it's that may open the door for more high school guys to get drafted. And again, I'll go back to that 08 draft because it was remarkable for having only two high school pitchers who got drafted in the first round, and only one of whom signed, Ethan Martin. And that lets us transition to our podcast question, which we're going to wrap up the podcast here real quick with a couple questions. Of course, Joe LaCates, as usual, sending in the podcast question. You know, who will be better between Matt Perk and Garrett Cole? As we look through the draft look down the road at 2011. You already mentioned Matthew Perk. Does he follow that Matt Harvey track? You hope for his sake he doesn't. Now, he didn't turn down $4 million. I think those reports are exaggerated. It looks like he turned down in the low $2 million range. He still turned down a lot of money, and now he's going to Texas Christian. One difference is that Matthew Perk will be eligible as a sophomore, so he will be in the same draft as Garrett Cole. I'm going to give that edge to Garrett Cole because Garrett Cole throws 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Not all the time, but he sits in the mid to upper 90s. I just think Garrett Cole's pure arm strength is so rare. And the reports on him, he was number one on our Team USA top 20 that Aaron did. His pure arm strength is very rare in college, and it sounds like the makeup has gotten better. Those are big concerns about Garrett Cole in high school. It sounds like he was a better teammate this summer than the reports we had out of high school. And again, look for UCLA to be very dangerous in 2010. We'll see if the Bruins ever figure out how to play. You know, if they can ever play fundamental baseball, catch the ball, hit the ball, throw the ball, not lollygag everywhere. You know, we'll see if the Bruins can ever do that. But if they do, they have Trevor Bauer, Rob Rasmussen, or Rasmussen, as I've been saying, and Garrett Cole. That could be special. So I'm going to give that edge to Garrett Cole.
Sure.
That's just me. One other email I want to mention is Adam S. just gave us some kudos to J.J. Cooper and I. He thanked us for our Fix the Draft podcast. It was one of the most interesting conversations he's heard about the draft, and no one else besides Baseball America is that knowledgeable about the draft. We appreciate it, Adam, and I think so. But before we wrap the podcast, I forgot to ask you a question that I meant to ask you, Connor.
Yeah.
Just on the high school top 25, who's kind of your, not necessarily personal pick to click, but who's a guy who maybe you think is lower on the list, who has the best chance of jumping way up to the top of the list? Is that a guy like a Justin O'Connor, who is a Midwestern kid, seems like he's shown some flashes at Tournament of Stars anyway, of having some real hitting ability and some pitching ability, or there's somebody else on that list that you kind of like, maybe the Aviles kid. He sounds interesting, the kid out of New York.
Yeah.
Is there a guy, or maybe even a guy who didn't make the 25, but who you think has a shot to break into that first-round consideration?
Sure, sure. I'll give you Aviles. I think I just say it. Aviles.
It doesn't have to be one guy either. You can, right. You can go on for a while.
Yeah, he is interesting, and you know, sometimes you see those northern kids increase their velocity.
Absolutely.
You know, in the springtime. But one guy that I really like is Drew Sisco.
Okay.
And the reason I like him is because, you know, his brother pitches in the Phillies.
I do like Drew Sisco. I remember this profile, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing about him is that he doesn't have the raw arm strength that a lot of these pitchers on this list have, but he knows how to pitch.
Yeah.
He can control. He already controls and commands four different pitches.
And he's a grandson of a pitching coach and big leaguer and Galen Sisco, so he has got pitchability. It seems like it just comes naturally to him.
It does. It absolutely does. And the thing with those kind of guys is that when you learn how to pitch, you know, before you have outstanding stuff,
yeah.
Some of those guys end up being better because they actually know what to do instead of just blowing their fastball by guys.
And unlike his older brother Mike, he's not 5'10 or 6 foot. He's like 6'3, 6'4. Is he not? Yeah. He's got, I don't remember 6'2. How big he is. I remember he had legitimate size, and that's the biggest issue with his older brother, who's already in Double A in his first full season in pro ball, and you know, had a nice college career in South Carolina. So I like that being a pick to click. I also love that Drew Sisco goes to Wando High School, which is just fun to say.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, he has the better size, and so if his stuff increases a little bit, you know, he already knows what to do with it, and he's going to be even more effective than he already is. And you know, I've already seen him just carve up these lineups every time out. You know, he just goes out there and deals.
And that's, again, we're kind of bringing it back to the beginning of the podcast, which where we talked a little bit about Madison Bumgarner making his big league debut. And this guy I talked to this morning just talking about, he likes the fact that Madison Bumgarner carved up Double A guys with basically just not the same arm strength that he had last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you could debate why the arm strength wasn't the same, but he saw him 86 to 90, and he said his fastball still had late life. He still had control of it, and he actually had command of it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if you've listened to the podcast at all, and you've listened to me ramble on for 40-plus minutes like we are today, I love fastball command.
Sure.
And I just think we can make pitching as complicated as you want to. If you command the fastball and you can get a hitter out with a fastball, when they're looking for a fastball, you're going to be good.
Yeah,
you're going to succeed.
The thing with Bumgarner, I mean, do you think it goes back to the fact that coming out of high school, you know, there were reports that he wasn't really allowed to throw a curveball or a breaking ball until later in his high school career. So he really learned how to pitch off that fastball, command the pitch, and that's...
I think that's exactly what it is. I think that's absolutely what it is, and I talked about this with the scout today. When you see younger pitchers, amateur pitchers, who every time they need them, or even pro pitchers, we'll bring it to Clay Buchholz. We had this debate with Jim Callis and you know, in our top 100 last year or 2 years ago about Clay Buchholz, Jabba Chamberlain. Who do you like? Why did I like Jabba Chamberlain? Because when he needs to make a pitch, he throws his fastball just as often as he throws his slider. Mm-hmm. When Clay Buchholz needs to make a pitch, it's never the fastball, or it's rarely the fastball. And it's the same thing with a lot of young pitchers. When you're a young pitcher, especially an amateur, and when every time you need to make a pitch, it's a secondary pitch, well, those pitches just aren't going to be... You see with David Price. You just don't get as many guys chasing that slider out of the zone. You better learn to throw your breaking ball to be a swing-and-miss pitch in the strike zone. Because most of the time, you have to throw it in the strike zone to get major league hitters to swing at it.
Yep.
Yeah, you can get guys to chase, but not all the time. And if you want to get the best hitters out, you better be able to get them out in the zone. That takes command. That takes late life. It takes... velocity is part of it, but not all of it. And I just think the biggest part is being able to throw a swing-and-miss pitch in the strike zone. That's very hard to do. But to be a big league frontline guy, you better be able to do that. Clay Buchholz does not do that with his fastball. Jabba Chamberlain can, but he doesn't do it consistently. And David Price is still learning that. And that's a big difference. And that's why I like young pitchers who can get out with the fastball. Clearly, there's more to it than that. Clearly, you can't just go out there and throw 60, 70, 80% fastballs. I think I overdo it when I talk about that, when I go to those extremes. You have to have a really special fastball, like a Curt Schilling or a Roger Clemens fastball, to be able to do that. Those are few and far between. But
or the dominating sinker type.
Right, absolutely. And even those, like a Kevin Brown, even those guys are few and far between. That's very rare. But I want to see young pitchers who can throw the fastball and get hitters out with the fastball. Because, you know, And that's what I saw with Ty Young at Tournament of Stars. He got guys out with his fastball. Mm-hmm. He finished him off with a breaking ball, but he kept throwing the fastball until the guys showed they could hit it.
Yeah.
And most of the time they couldn't. They just fouled it off. That's right.
Wood bats, you know, 97-mile-an-hour pitch up in the zone.
And I
a lot of these guys, as good as they are, no chance.
And I respect that crazily about Garrett Cole. He just attacks with a fastball.
Yeah, I saw Cole pitch for the Team USA collegiate team when they were here, you know, in our backyard, which is great.
That's awesome.
And, I mean, it was against Guatemala, but he was just, I mean, you could just tell that he was dominating.
Yeah.
And even against a real team, I guess I would say.
Yeah, that's fair.
You can see him dominate. He got ahead with his fastball. Basically, his strategy was to get ahead, you know, strike one, strike two, and then it seemed like he would
almost
he would scare him. He would kind of brush him back and then throw a fastball away or a slider.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that kind of juice on the fastball, and his pitching style to intimidate, he'd be scary to face.
Well, I think that's you know, when you look at our college list, that's why Chris Sale was a top guy in our Cape list, because that fastball. That's why Anthony Renato is a top guy on the four-year college list. And it sounds like that's why Jamison Tyone and A.J. Cole are top of the high school list. So the 2010 draft starting to take shape, and the biggest X factor, of course, remains Bryce Harper. And he is enrolled at the College of Southern Nevada. He'll take his GED in October. Once he passes that, he'll be eligible to play at College of Southern Nevada, and then I think all hell's going to break loose. We're going to see all the scouts run in, and right now we've got I mean, one of the first things you ended up doing for us last year, Connor, with your internship, was kind of a chase for the number one pick.
Yep.
You kind of did that a couple times on the blog, and we'll see. Let's have the Nats are going to be able to hold off the Royals and the hard-charging Baltimore Orioles for that top pick in next year's draft. But in my mind, 2010 is not a great year to have a really high draft pick, because it's just not a great class. So we'll have more on the Baseball America podcast next week, obviously. But Connor, I'll wrap us up here.
Well, I just want to say, have you seen Southern Nevada's schedule? Do you know they played Chipola?
No, I did not see that. They played last year, so they'll open the year. That's awesome. That's where every scout in the country will be there, because they always have that opening season schedule tournament before the Division I four-year guys start up, and that's what they do it on purpose. So you could have Jake Eliopoulos and LeVon Washington and company there at Chipola taking on the Harper brothers and Donnie Roach. That will be
fun. I wonder if Southern Nevada has added a bunch of bleachers this year because of all the people that are going to be showing up to these games now.
They might have to. Maybe they should move them to Cashman Field, the AAA field. But I know we have guys who work for us who want to get out to Vegas, and I know we'll be in touch with our usual Vegas contacts, which is a lot of fun. We like our Vegas contacts.
Absolutely.
So those are good guys. But that will be the team to watch. I mean, CCSN might be the most talented team in college or amateur baseball next year, bar none. And it'll be unusual to see that many junior college guys that high in the draft. We hope you bared through the entire podcast. A long podcast today, but we didn't do one last week, so we're just making up for it. So for Aaron Fitt and for Connor Glassy, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.